Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Motivation Mindset. I'm Risa Williams. I'm a book author and therapist, and this is a podcast about getting stuff done without all the stress. And for everyone listening out there, if you'd like to join in and work with me, I'm starting a Get Stuff Done Goals group. We're going to meet every month, and you can join in the fun and get some tools that can help you feel more motivated. Go to risawilliams.com or patreon.com/risawilliams to find out more information. And now, here's another episode to help you tune up your daily mindset. Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Motivation Mindset. I'm here with a special guest today, Wally Rashid. He is the founder of Woodland Pulse, an online retailer specializing in modern organic home decor. He has a background in medicine and a degree in biological sciences. Wally made a significant career shift and trusted his intuition to pursue his passion. And that's what we're here today to talk about. We're going to be talking about career transition. So welcome, Wally, to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's so nice to meet you. I'm so lucky with this podcast to meet so many new people from all different walks of life and doing all sorts of cool things. I know in my own life, I made a big career transition because I was working full-time in academia. And I was always juggling clients on the side, but I had never really thought to make my private practice my main business. And then additionally, I made a career transition to shift into writing self-help books and kind of really hone in on doing that as more of a full-time thing. Career transitions are interesting because from a psychological point of view, I think it stirs up a lot of fear and anxiety that we don't always know we have until we decide to make that leap. So talk to me about that for you. What was that like for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I spent my entire life in medicine. I'm 27, but I graduated with a biological sciences degree. I knew from the very beginning, I told myself I wanted to become a surgeon. I entered medical school at George Washington University in DC. So I was pretty set, and I started conducting plastic surgery research at Stanford. So I would fly back and forth between DC and California. And what I've known throughout my journey with medicine is I loved the human body and I loved science, but a large part of it, which I think some people feel regardless of what career, that's something that they think internally, but they don't really say. But I think a large part of me wanting to become a doctor was, the financial rewards of being a doctor, and then also the social status, which maybe at a subconscious level, it did affect my desire to want to go in.
Yeah.
I entered medical school and I wasn't fulfilled. I wasn't fulfilled. I wasn't happy. I was doing great, but I just didn't feel like it was, how much I could stretch myself in my life.
Yeah.
And that sense of unfulfillment really started to eat at me. And, so midway through medical school, I started collecting rare plants just as a hobby. And I thought it was a fun hobby and I would do it on the side. Uh-huh. So I would buy plants overseas and I would grow them and I would sell them. They're hobbyist plants. They're like a nice, beautiful house plants. And it really started to grow. And I started to build a plant community while I was in medical school. And I really started to find it interesting. And I just started to grow and expand. And I started a website. Started selling planters that I began to make using 3D printing. And it reached a point where I was finding so much fulfillment in doing that. So once it got to the point where I could actually see a future with it, I put together a business plan and I decided to do the hop. And here I am.
Wow. I love that story. I love that you followed your passion. It started with this hobby of, I just like plants. And I want to share these plants with everyone. And honestly, plants became a huge thing during COVID. I noticed so many people were getting really into plants and taking care of them and you know, kind of displaying them and this kind of thing, because I think they are comforting.
Yeah, they definitely are. And I think a lot of people were also stuck at home during COVID too. So they had to find hobbies that would assist them from home.
Yeah. And you're stuck staring at the bland walls of your home, you know, and thinking, I would like to put a plant there. And we know from scientific studies that looking at green things and being in green spaces tends to bring our stress and anxiety down. Like, it's been proven that if you just put someone in nature for 20 minutes, they're going to feel a drop in anxiety. So maybe unconsciously, it's a way to get through hard times. Like, surrounding yourself with plants maybe gives us that feeling that we were all searching for, you know, during the pandemic.
Absolutely. And that's funny you say that, because right now, a large part of my business and who I'm collaborating with, there's a new design trend called biophilic interior design. Uh-huh. And it's making a lot of growth right now in Europe. And the whole premise of biophilic interior design is bringing nature indoors, especially in commercial spaces and offices, because they've noticed that employees have reduced stress, reduced anxiety. So there's a lot of science to back that up as well, which is really interesting.
Right. So it seems like a good trend to be getting into right now. And it's one that you're passionate about. I know Joseph Campbell said, if you follow your bliss, doors will open where you didn't think there would be doors. And I think in this case that happened with you. And I love to see real life examples of that. You were so passionate about plants. You thought, I'm just going to do this and I'm going to go for it, right? So talk to me about that decision you made. You were trusting your gut. You were feeling like, hey, this is a thing. People are liking it. I'm liking it. And then there's that scary leap into, okay, what do I do now?
Absolutely. So for me, I was really enjoying what I was doing. And I was also very unfulfilled in the medicine. And I think it's because I joined medicine and I went into it for the wrong reasons. The part of the jump really for me to make the decisive decision, okay, I'm going to do this. It's kind of funny. I tell people this, but I was actually on a run and I was just having a pretty bad day. The unfulfillment was really creeping up on me. And I wasn't sure how to get out, because separate from the unfulfillment, you also have to be realistic with the finances of taking out these medical school loans.
Yeah.
So I was trying to figure out how could I actually do this, and how could I do it while also considering my finances with all the loans that I had to do.
Yeah.
So to me, luckily I was on my medical school. I was doing a research year at Stanford this time. So I began to do that full time, and I had 6 months back before I had to go back to med school. Mm-hmm. So I told myself I could figure out a way to make this business successful enough in 6 months to where I can be able to handle the burden of my loans, then I'll take the jump. Yeah. And I think it was really nice, because having that, knowing that I have a specific time frame, well, it was very helpful, because I took it up as a challenge, and I just put my head down for 6 months just to kind of prove to myself and see if I could do it. And luckily I was able to. So that was the big shifting moment, I guess.
Yeah. And maybe by giving yourself a deadline and then really believing in your own deadline, because often we give ourselves deadlines and we know we can just blow right past them. But for you, this was a real tangible deadline of a financial situation. Like, I only have 6 months to make this work. And so your brain kind of signed up for it. And in that way, you circumvented your own fear and anxiety about the change, perhaps.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I can't, is it called the Stoicism method or the Stoic method? There's a name for it, that the timeline factor actually plays such a big factor, because if we have a project, whatever we're trying to do, and we tell ourselves, okay, we have a year to do it, most people will not start until month 11.
Right.
We just tend to put things off, but having a deadline actually helps so much with productivity, because what you'll realize is sometimes the more time you have to work on something, the more time you end up wasting, because
it's,
you know,
so
you have
true.
A lot of extra time.
We all want endless time, but when we actually get endless time, it sometimes doesn't help us get anything done. It's like too many decisions and too much pressure. And so we just put everything off, just like you said. And that's the piece people don't understand, because it's counterintuitive to wanting freedom and wanting all this time to do stuff. Sometimes that inhibits us. That makes us feel more fear.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I always think about it as, let's say you woke up one day and you checked the mail and you had an unexpected bill pop up, you know, that you had no idea it came, but you had an unexpected bill and it was more than you knew, like you currently had in your bank account, but you only had a month to figure it out. Most people with that sort of stress, they'll figure out a way. Or, you know, if an unexpected event happens, they'll figure out a way to do it because they don't really have any other option. That's kind of how I viewed it, is I knew that for me, if I didn't do it, it was going to lead to a life of unfulfillment. Because I knew that, I decided to wait until, at least the way I viewed it is, if I decided to wait until residency, then I had the fear that I was going to push it off until I became a doctor. And if I became a doctor, I was going to push it off until I ended up having my own practice. And my biggest fear was pushing off peace. So that was a big factor. And I think that having the timeline and believing in the timeline, like you said, is so, so important.
Right. So how did you navigate all the little roadblocks that come when you're starting your own business that often people don't predict? They have maybe a timeline or they have a goal, and they're not prepared for all the little glitches that happen and all those little self-doubt moments that occur in that first couple years of business.
Yeah, that was definitely a big struggle. And I mean, it still is. There's always unexpected things. In the beginning, what I always tell people, especially if you're doing a large life shift, is that your large life shift is paired with a large identity shift.
Yeah.
Because if you've spent 10 years or five, whatever, in a specific career or a specific role in your life, and you're deciding to do a shift, it's not just a physical external shift. You really do have to re-identify who you are as a person. And that is going to affect the people you surround yourself with, because they've known you for so long as this individual, and now you're trying to do a shift into somebody else. So I think for me, the most difficult part was believing in myself enough, especially the first 3 months, because I was hearing, and I wouldn't even say criticism, but the people that love you and your closest friends, they want the best for you.
Right.
And sometimes people don't realize it's not, I'd like to think most people aren't objectively mean, but sometimes people say things and out of care, but they don't realize that it'll lead to doubt. And
yeah,
I think in the beginning, that was the biggest thing. So I just told myself that I wasn't going to use my words to prove to people it was going to work, because my words had no merit.
So I love that. My actions are going to speak louder than words. I can only soothe them so much because I'm nervous too. And it's hard to soothe other people when you yourself are also nervous about the outcome, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. So for the first 3 months, I really just had to keep my head down. I really put blinders on. I have an amazing friend group, and I'm still in great communication with them, and I still hang out with them all the time. But in the first 3 months, I told them, hey guys, you know, I'm going to be putting my head down for 3 months. I'm sorry, I won't be going out as much. It's nothing about you guys. I have a goal that I'm trying to focus on. And separate from having more time to actually work towards that goal, you spend less time with having those doubts or having people ask you questions, because it's tough in the beginning when you have a goal or a dream and you don't have any physical proof of it yet.
Yeah.
And that's where part of your belief is, because if you don't have any physical proof of it and you have people asking you, oh, how is that going to happen? How are you going to do it? And all you have is that thought in your head that it can happen. I think that's when people give up or really struggle with in the beginning.
Right.
So my,
I love what you're saying about that, because so much of goals is that we're taking something intangible that's inside our head and a little bit abstract still, and we're trying to make it tangible, which is a very uncomfortable process to try to make something tangible. And the problem is we often need people to just blindly believe in us and give us that support and motivation. Often what I find is people don't really jump on board until the thing is tangible. But by that point, you have walked yourself down such a hard road of believing in yourself and figuring out all those little problems so you can show them a product. And then they're like, oh, great job. But by that point, it's great to hear it. You didn't need it as much at that point as you did at the beginning when there was a lot of self-doubt, right?
Gosh, absolutely. And it's funny because that's exactly how it was for me. In the beginning, nobody believed it. And this is the thing. is that you can't, nobody is a bad person. And I really had to get myself to understand this, that in the beginning, when you don't have any tangible results, the people that don't believe it, they're not necessarily bad people,
yeah,
but they can't see what's in your mind. So,
and it's a human thing. It's just all humans. If they can't see it, they usually won't believe it or sign up for it or tell you it's a great plan. If they can see something, then, you know, maybe half of them are like, oh, okay, I'm getting an idea. You know, it's the same for me when I'm writing a book. I can't really convince people, hey, these things are going to be great and you're going to read them and these tools are going to work. I have to like slog through it and put it all on paper and mess around with it and get it to that point where somebody reads a page of it and they're like, oh, I get this. I get what you're doing now for the last year.
Exactly. And even if the whole entire world believed in your idea, but you don't believe in yourself, it's not going to happen.
It won't matter. Exactly. Exactly right.
It really won't matter. And so by the end of it, once you make that goal, what a lot of people don't realize is you actually begin to like yourself more.
Yeah.
Because you have a sense of confidence you've never had before.
Right.
And that manifests in so many different aspects of your life. If you're in your dating life, in your personal life, your friendships, you have a sense of self-confidence that you never had before. And I think that's been an amazing outcome for me too, that I didn't really expect going into all of this.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. I think it ties to what you said previously, and something I've learned just in my years as a therapist, that people get really tied into having their identity equal their occupation. And we enforce this as a society because often the first thing someone will ask you is, what do you do? Right? It's not like, what do you find fun or whatever? It's, what do you do? Like, how can I summarize you and put you in a box? And for you, you started out thinking, okay, I'm a doctor, so I'm going to say that and people will understand it. And your identity kind of just, it gets sucked into that. And what happens is that can be really damaging for our self-esteem because jobs change, people change. We are all so much bigger than what we do for a living. We have so many other sides of ourselves, so many multifaceted parts of our personality, but yet we're boiling ourselves down to this one thing. And I think I like what you're saying, because when you decide to give it all up, it really challenges you to like the other parts of yourself, to believe in the other parts of yourself that maybe have been waiting around for you to believe in them.
Exactly. That's so true. And like what we were saying before is, even if the whole world's believed in you, if you don't believe in yourself, it's not going to happen. Also, when you are making a shift in your life, what has helped me so much, I think this is one of the most important aspects, is visioning and seeing who you want to be before it happens.
Right.
Because if you have a goal, if you have an objective external goal, but you can't, you haven't taken the time to imagine the person you'll be in that once you reach that goal, it's a lot harder. Your brain likes to have a very concrete idea or image or video of what you're trying to get to. It makes it a lot easier to get there. So even when I made that that huge transition, I spent a lot of time every night. This was a little bit odd, but I was watching some YouTube videos, and I know a lot of athletes do this. Actually, their trainers will have them vision themselves actually scoring the goal or creating the hitting, you know, making the shot. So I would do a lot of visioning every night and imagining myself that I already was the successful businessman. And I imagined as if it was happening at that moment. And I think what that did for me at a subconscious level is I began to believe that I already achieved it. So
nice.
The process of getting there it was stressful at times, but it didn't feel like a consistent stress of not being able to achieve it, because in my mind, I already was that person. I just had to externalize that, if that makes sense.
I love that. It makes perfect sense to me. It is a form of mental rehearsal. And as you know, as someone who has a background in science, the more we picture something, the more our brain thinks we've already done it. So you picturing where you want to go, especially where you want to go emotionally, and that's the piece people often miss. They often think, oh, I'm holding the award in my hand or the trophy or whatever, or the keys to the new house. But they're missing the component of, how am I feeling? Well, I'm feeling really proud of myself. I'm feeling really confident. That's the mental rehearsal we want to train our brain to get to. And I like what you're saying. I do a tool called the future photo, where I ask people to picture like a Polaroid shot of what is the symbolic image of me finishing my residency or writing the screenplay or launching this business, right? Give me a concrete image. Because again, we're taking something intangible and making it tangible. And often with starting a business, it's very vague. It's like, well, I want to, you know, have an office and this and this. Well, what symbolically and emotionally represents that to you? Are you staring out on the view, looking at your employees, thinking, we did it, we made it through our first year? Give me a mental snapshot, and then we can hold on to it and rehearse it and just go back to that snapshot over and over again.
Absolutely. That's so true. And the way I like to think about it is that any action that I take, it typically begins with an emotion wanting to create the action. So when I think about a goal, it's typically a thought in my head first, and that thought elicits an emotion. And once the emotion is large enough, it gives me enough activation energy to actually act on it.
Nice.
So whenever I would do these techniques, I would vision and imagine as though it already happened until I reached the point in that process where I could actually feel an emotional response in my body to doing that exercise. Because, and Tony Robbins, he does this in a lot of his practices as well. He really focuses on getting people to get an emotion out of their body, because emotion is such a strong facilitator to actually taking action. You know, so whenever I would do these visioning techniques, I would wait until I felt the emotion of as if it actually happened and how I would act. And that emotion really helped me throughout the day because I began to act on that feeling.
And you can access it. It becomes like a portal. You're practicing the feeling you want to feel, so that when the big goal happens, you actually feel it. Because often what high achievers do is they achieve a lot of goals and they feel nothing emotionally of how we want to feel about all these little steps. Because a lot of them are really hard, frustrating steps, right? So it's like a reward. It's like an emotional reward we're training ourselves to have.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest shifts I've noticed once I made this transition is, I'd say I was so successful in my career before I decided to make the shift. But I think one of the best factors is that I was reaching these goals beforehand, but it was the intention or the energy with that was so much stress and so much just negative emotion. And I felt like I kept assuming subconsciously, okay, all the happiness that I want, once I get there, I'll finally start to feel happy. And I was worried that I was just going to wish away my life. Like I was going to keep wishing for the future goal and not realizing that a whole, you know, lifetime has passed and I never really got that satisfaction. So when you vision and you really believe in yourself, then the journey becomes fun because it removes, you're going to have stressful days and hiccups are going to come. But if you can get yourself to believe that, you can make it happen because you already are the person that is needed to make that happen, then the journey becomes fun because you have so much belief in yourself that, okay, it's just going to be a matter of time. But if I take the steps, then it's sure to come. And that's where the self-confidence with it is so important, because once you develop that ability to go about your life that way, it becomes more of a journey than anything.
Right. And you realize it's all a lifelong journey about believing in yourself, getting strength from going through the hard stuff, and then letting yourself feel connected to the good stuff when it actually happens. Thanks so much. Where can people find you and your company?
Yeah, you can find my business. It's woodlandpulse.com. So woodland like forest and pulse like a heartbeat pulse, woodlandpulse.com.
Thanks so much for sharing all your wonderful insight. Have a good rest of your day.
You as well.
If you're enjoying tools discussed on the show, please visit risawilliams.com. There you can learn about upcoming episodes, you can check out my books, and you can sign up for my Get Stuff Done Goals group. I'm Risa Williams, and we're out of time for today. Thanks for listening.